How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez and Dave Meltzer here on Wrestling Observer Radio. It is December 27th, 2011, here at figure4online.com/wrestlingobserver.com. One of the busier weeks of the year, as we talked about yesterday. Friday is a big day, but kicked off the week with kind of a, wasn't really a bang. I thought Raw was a pretty good show until the main event segment, which I thought was, I don't want to say it was wretched, but I wasn't into it. And not really anything leading up to the Royal Rumble. Obviously, there was a preview for the Mystery Man who debuts next weekend. We'll talk all about the show. And I also watched all of the Ring of Honor iPay-per-view. So talk about all that stuff today. And Dave, how you doing?
I'm fine. Why don't you talk about the iPay-per-view first?
I enjoyed the iPay-per-view. I did think it was too long. It was a long show. It's a little easier to watch because I was watching a replay, and thus it really wasn't 4 hours and 10 minutes. It was about 3 hours and 40 minutes because I just skipped through the intermission. But still a very long show. I thought the main event told a great story, but again, probably about 10 minutes too long. I thought that overall, aside from the chair shots to the head, I think the deal is you talked about yesterday where you've seen six-hour-long shows that weren't too long. I think the key is when you're putting a show together, if you look at the card and you look at who's on the card and you think to yourself, okay, which of these matches are likely to be, like, great matches? Which of them are likely to be good matches? And which of them are likely to be average matches? And try and put your show together based on what you've got, in the sense that the Chikara Ai pay-per-view was 2 hours and 20 minutes, and there weren't really any blow-away matches on the show. So the matches they had didn't need to go 20 minutes or 25 minutes. You know, everything was timed pretty much exactly how long a match needed to be in. And as you mentioned yesterday, the tag match. I mean, I watched the tag match, and there really wasn't anything wrong with it.
The tag gauntlet or the Hobbs Benjamin?
But it didn't need to be the gauntlet match. The gauntlet match didn't need to be a gauntlet match.
And it probably could have gone. I mean, you could have done it in 12 minutes easily. I mean, if you needed to, you could have done it in 8. But by going as long as they did, I think that was one that went way too long.
Yeah, I think a four-way tag team gauntlet match to determine the number one contenders that goes maybe 12, 14 minutes, that would be totally fine. It didn't need to be.
If it was gauntlet, I can almost see it going as long as it did. That was the problem.
Because, but it didn't need to be a gauntlet. That's the point.
Because one of the things with gauntlet matches are that there's that tendency, and we see this in TNA all the time, of doing like these one-minute falls, and the whole match is like a joke. So I can see them going like, oh, you know, we don't want to do what TNA did. But on a show like this, they didn't need to make it a gauntlet match. So, I mean, that was one of the things. So it wasn't pushed. I don't remember it even being pushed that it was a gauntlet match ahead of time. I think it was something that they may have, but I don't remember it because I didn't see the go-home show, but I saw all the TVs leading to the go-home show, and I don't think that was mentioned that way.
Yeah, I don't know what the deal was with the chair shots. I was appalled. It's actually kind of, I don't want to say funny, maybe perversely funny, but to watch the show and poor Nigel McGuinness, who is a young guy, and it's never come out publicly what his health issue is, but I'm pretty sure that he regrets taking as many headshots as he did during his career. And he's there on commentary because he is now a commentator and not a wrestler. And you just see him, and I mean, he's outright screaming, "Put your hands up!" And he's talking about
like called even more attention to it.
Yeah, he's appalled watching this, and later he tries to explain that, you know, you get hit in the jaw one time the right way and you're knocked out. So during my career, I always made sure to try and get my hands up and protect myself at all times. He's talking about this throughout the show, and I just know. I know there are guys, like a lot of the guys in the locker room, that, I mean, the idea of unprotected chair shots to the head is appalling to them, but there are guys that for some reason, in the heat of the moment, they decide they're not putting their hands up. And like I said, probably should be
not
a
even
fine.
Heat of the moment. Some guys just...
They won't.
They have a mentality that's pre-whatever. You know, like, there was a time where you didn't do that because it was a sign of toughness that you just take the damn thing.
Yeah, it's 2012. It needs
to end.
I
know, and that's why I was really surprised that they did that, and I really don't have an explanation as to why it happened, other than, you know, there are a lot of channels, and that's why I'm really surprised that it happened, because there's a lot of channels you got to go through. If it was one, and it was like Mark Briscoe taking it or delivering it or something, it's one thing, but, you know, we're talking about different guys. The guy who threw it had to know to throw it. The guy taking it had to know he was taking it. And in theory, you know, a couple of people in management had to know as well to approve it. I mean, I guess you can just do it against management's wishes. And if it happened once, I would say maybe somebody snuck it in, because I've seen wrestlers do that all the time. When it happens multiple times, I've got to think, in more than one match, I've got to think that, you know, that's a different story. And the fact that it was in more than one match, I mean, one of the things about that surprised me is, and a couple of people brought this up, is okay, you know, Cornette knows you don't, you know, burn the audience out with a match like they put on in the middle of the show and then try to come back with what they came back with, and timing and long shows and things like that. But long shows, I mean, he's been a part of long shows, so I don't know about the long shows. But the idea of burning people out, I guess that was the idea of what the intermission was for, is that you take the intermission after that and then you come back fresh. It just didn't work this time. I guess this was the deal.
Well, chair shots aside, the Carino-Steen match, I mean, you know, God bless him for working hard, and there was some good stuff in the match, but again, it was a match where it's kind of uncomfortable watching it. All of the risks they took, all of the damage they took. I mean, some of this stuff just, you know, every time Nigel was talking about, it's funny listening to him do commentary, because a lot of guys, you know, you take a Jerry Lawler, and, you know, he was a wrestler, but he wasn't doing the modern style of wrestling, the ROH style and that sort of thing. But Nigel's a guy that did. And so, you know, Nigel's sitting there telling you all of the stupid things you shouldn't be doing, like taking a bump against the ring apron or on the corner of the ring apron, and not getting your hands up for things. And you know, you almost feel bad listening to him, because he's got to kind of stay in announcer mode, but you can clearly tell there's that part in the back of his head where he's just screaming at these guys to stop landing on the guardrail, stop landing on the edge of the ring, you're going to regret it. But, you know, they keep doing it, so some of this stuff was kind of hard to watch, and, you know, it was that match and the chair shots, and a lot of stuff, actually, not a lot of stuff, but there were certain couple of kicks in the main event. I mean, it just, I don't exactly like watching my wrestling where I really kind of feel uncomfortable watching it. I want to enjoy myself watching it, and I enjoyed myself through 80% of the show, but there was that other part of the show that just, it's kind of tough to watch sometimes. And
you know when you're talking about the kicks? I really believe that you can kick in the chest hard instead of in the head, where you have to kind of hold back.
Yeah, I agree.
And it's probably more effective anyway. It'll make more noise. The people who and I, yeah, some people go, oh, well, you can take it in the chest, which is true. But you don't want to prove that you're tough by doing it to the head when you don't need to, I don't think. In a professional wrestling match where the idea should be to protect the guy.
Especially in a match where, you know, Davey Richards is great, Eddie Edwards is great, but listen, you're doing a 40-minute match, and I don't know how many kicks to the head there were in that match, but when you do that many kicks to the head in a 40-minute match, you're not doing everyone perfectly. There's going to be one or two or three or more where you hit the guy, and I don't know. I don't think you need it, to be honest, but that's just my opinion, and you know, the only other thing, only other negative is whoever's doing production, we got to get this remedied, because there was some bad production.
But, there was an issue with whatever, there was a machine they did the replay with that was a complete disaster, so it was nobody's fault. Dan Bynum was the head of production, and he was ready to kill people because of the way that thing was behaving, you know, was messing up. And so that was that part of the production. The other parts of the production are that, you know, it's very clear that, it's amazing because they're owned by a TV company, but there's no budget for production. I mean, it's one thing when the faulty equipment, you know, which was one of those things, but when it comes to the lighting and the audio, and it's one of the problems of the television show, and you're you're owned by Sinclair Broadcasting, and your stuff looks worse than, you know, Ohio Valley Wrestling. You know, it's that shouldn't happen, and that's something that's really going to handicap them, because the fact is that, you know, yeah, there was a time when you can do, you know, low production values of a wrestling show, I suppose, and get away with it. I don't know if that's true all the way across the board. But you know, because I mean, most of the old promotions, you know, a lot of them, not most of them, but probably the majority would tape in you know, television studios where the lighting was perfect. And the audio was perfect because it was a TV studio that was used, by, you know, at a TV station. And they are looking at, and I don't know if it's the DuBurns Arena in Baltimore, but they are looking at a permanent taping spot for their TVs, and that would be set up to be their studio, and that in theory those issues would be taken care of for the TVs. But then again, when you're on your iPay-per-views, that's another story.
Well, I mean, the thing with the iPay-per-view is, I wasn't even really talking about the audio or the lighting, both of which obviously could be improved, but if you've got a machine that you're trying to do replays and it's clearly not working, then just stop using the machine for the show.
Yeah, well,
you know what I mean?
They
you didn't need any...
That they had to do some replays just because there were so many spectacular things.
Well, if it's not working, then I don't know. You know, if it's not working once, you give it another shot. And then when it totally isn't working a second time, then it's like, okay, if you're doing it a third time, you're asking for trouble to me.
Yeah.
I don't know.
No, they felt they needed to show it, and they just had that sound in the background that was screwing everything up.
I did, like I said, I really did, I loved the story of the main event. Just everything about it, including, like, you know, the whole storyline leading up to it with Eddie going to train with Dan Severn and how Davey had set it up, but then he went to Japan, so Eddie kind of went in and... You know, Davey was upset that he went in and trained without him, and then Eddie goes in there and he's trying to use all these tricks he learned from the Beast, and then the Beast got his spot there at the end and left the two guys in the ring, and Eddie took everything and kept kicking out and finally could take no more. And I just thought, and even Steen coming out at the end and mocking them for their usual, because that's the kind of thing that everybody loves at the end of the Ring of Honor shows. Two guys have a great match. They come out there. They hug. They put each other over. Everybody cheers. And then here comes this guy to just talk about how the whole thing is BS and they suck and he'll kill both of them. And I don't think the reaction was probably what they expected, but... I just thought the whole thing was great.
I think they half-ass expected the reaction as far as with Steen and everything. I you know, if you watch the TV leading up to it, it was pretty clear that they're positioning Steen to be this character who's a heel that gets cheered.
Yeah.
I mean, that didn't surprise me so much, but you know, I know that they didn't expect the match itself to be so flat, because that was something that was talked about that. But, you know, every crowd's different, and, you know, they did the exact same match, you know, more or less, than everyone was talking about it as match of the year in, you know, a couple months back. So, you know, it's just every crowd's different. You can do the exact same match, and I've seen it. I've seen the exact same match spot for spot, move for move, tear the house down on a Friday night and then go see it on a Saturday night and it'd be flat. And you just go, well, it's a different crowd, that's all, you know, different city, different arena. Everything's different, even though this was actually the same arena, but it's still a different crowd. So there you go.
I did kind of like, too, how last year's final battle, Davey was left just absolutely completely beaten in the middle of the ring. And then a year later here in the big rematch, he left Eddie absolutely completely beaten in the middle of the ring. So yeah. Told a nice year-long story. So there you go. All right, let's talk about Raw. This was in Chicago, so of course it was the CM Punk show, and since it was in the man's hometown, he, of course, did the job to set up a match for next week.
Yeah.
Opened with his music hitting, and John Laurinaitis came out and mocked his entrance, which, John Laurinaitis has his good days and bad days, and I thought he had a pretty good day here, just being a campy goofball. So, of course...
Not speaking, he didn't.
Well, that's part of his charm, is he's so horrible at public speaking.
Yeah.
So he came out, and then Punk came out, and they had their big argument there. And Laurinaitis ended up saying that we're going to do a gauntlet match tonight. You're going to wrestle three men, Punk. And if you beat all three, if anybody beats you tonight, then they're going to get a championship match next week. And Punk said, well, what happens if I beat all of them? And essentially, Punk said, if I beat all of them, I want a match with you. And Laurinaitis said, you don't want any of this. And the fans chanted, you can't wrestle. And Punk said the fans must have been watching their All Japan tapes. He got All Japan on the air here in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
So they gave Laurinaitis hell. So he finally said, yes, if you beat all three men, I will wrestle you. Which didn't happen. We had our final mystery promo for next week's return, and the conclusion was the end begins, which apparently has now got people thinking, well, maybe it is The Undertaker. With the,
I don't know. I keep hearing it's Jericho, so.
That's what people say, but...
Yeah. The impression I got is that Undertaker's not, you know, not supposed to be back so soon, but we'll see.
Could be a swerve, and they bring Undertaker back, and then Jericho comes back a week later.
I suppose. I don't know about that, but I suppose anything's possible.
I put nothing past these people.
No, I don't either. Doesn't matter.
Cody Rhodes and Booker T for the Intercontinental title. I actually really enjoyed
this wasn't for
match.
The Intercontinental title.
Oh, not for the Intercontinental title. Presumably
fact,
the next match will be.
I don't even know. I don't even know if they brought it up. I mean, now when I'm thinking back on it.
I presume this sets up a rubber match for the title, but I could be wrong.
It could.
They just did a TV match, obviously, but I thought it was better than the pay-per-view match.
It was better than the pay-per-view match.
Thought they
did
a...
The pay-per-view match was handicapped by Booker having to be handicapped from being jumped twice.
Yeah. He did a straight match here.
It was definitely a decent match, and Booker looked fine.
Yeah, he looks totally fine. They're playing up that he's old, yet still competitive and in great shape. So I guess he's WWE's Randy.
He got tired, but I mean, he was fine. They did a 12-minute match.
Yeah, it's WWE's
at a good pace.
Randy Couture here.
Yeah.
So he did a sunset flip, the twisting sunset flip out of the corner, which was the only move that he really looked like he kind of screwed up. And then Cody hit his kick. Booker kicked out, did a switch, axe kick. Place went nuts. He got the pin. So as noted, they're now 1-1. And presumably at some point they can, maybe even next week, first Raw of the new year, they can do a championship match. And,
I could see them, they're in Memphis, so I could see it maybe being Lawler.
Actually, they kind of were teasing that, so.
You know, yeah, you know, because Lawler would probably wrestle in Memphis, and Cody would probably be the one.
Which
so
makes...
Lawler would lose in Memphis, which, of course, is completely stupid, but it is his hometown, so that means he does have to lose. Don't know why.
So, it does make great sense that Booker beat Cody to lead to Cody versus Lawler.
Yeah, that doesn't make any sense at all. But it still doesn't mean it's not going to happen that way.
All right, we had Zach backstage thanking Cena and saying, I owe you one. And Cena did this promo. No wonder people hate John Cena. He goes, you don't owe me anything. All of this stuff, the headband, the Twitter account, the championship, it's all on you. Nothing's ever been given to you. I was like, really? You gave him the title shot last week.
Yeah.
But anyway, Ryder wanted to know what the deal with Kane was. And Cena said he was going to go find out and make sure the last Raw of 2011 went out with a bang. Yeah, sure did. So Lawler had a list of guys that were facing Punk. Jack Swagger, Dolph Ziggler, and Mark Henry were the three guys.
Boy, was that underwhelming.
I'll say. And, of course, Punk beats all three.
No, he didn't.
No, I said
if. Yeah.
Then he would get Laurinaitis. Kelly,
I should make mention of a couple of things. And this is actually stemming from last week's rating. The way that they worked this show, the key is that in the 10 o'clock and 11 o'clock hour, it was John Cena. And Brian Danielson was on the show, but if you blinked, you missed him. And Zack Ryder went from being in the main event to being in basically this new angle where he's got the hots for Eve Torres, which makes him into a prelim guy. And you could just see that... you know, even Punk didn't get the main event slot, you know, which in Chicago, which I thought was a given. You can see that, just with the show layout where everybody was put, that they definitely reacted to that rating last week or the quarter hours. And I figured they would, but, they did. Yeah.
Kelly was, I believe, plugging her website to the big show.
Yeah,
and
she was.
Show was told you to go talk to Laurinaitis. And, there you go. Laurinaitis is on the phone, and he's telling Brodus Clay that he'd debut next week on the show.
That's nice.
He sounded irritated, said Laurinaitis. So Show walked in, and Laurinaitis showed clips of him punching out Otunga on SmackDown, and boy, did he wallop that guy. So Otunga said this was lawsuit territory. Show said, I could beat you with one arm tied behind my back, so...
Oh, you should never say that during a promo, because it always ends the same way.
Oh, yeah. Gave Laurinaitis an idea. So, Cho said, "Remember one thing, a giant with one arm is still better than a smug lawyer with no testicles." So apparently testicles is no longer on the ban list after the last couple of weeks. Swagger and Dolph were having a horrible argument backstage when Vicky walked up and said, "Did not matter who beat Punk as long as one of them did." And then Henry walked up and acted intimidating, and after he left, they each blamed each other for not standing up to him. We had the Zack Ryder segment, him and Eve against Tyson Kidd and Natalya. They are already plugging that in July, they will be celebrating the 1,000th episode of Raw. So, girls did some spots. Zack tagged in. They did a four-way. Both the babyfaces hit the broski boots, and then Zack hit his move on Tyson, got the pin. Fans were super into Zack, but then he was all over Eve, who I guess is not all over him. So, good luck with that, Zack. He did let her hold the belt afterwards.
That's a good way to take him down a notch.
Mm-hmm. Cena came out and called out Kane, but instead out came Miz. This poor guy.
Miz, yeah, poor guy. With his, I mean, the first thing they do is make fun of his tan.
They make fun of his tan. He challenged Cena because he essentially said that after all this time, over and over, for months, he's been talking about how he beat John Cena at WrestleMania. Never has he mentioned a single time that Rock was actually responsible. Brings it up tonight. Says, "Everybody says I didn't really beat you. It was all The Rock. So I want to prove that I beat you here on the final Raw of 2011. So Cena said, "Well, let's do it." After he made fun of his tan, of course. And they had a quick little match that ended when Miz left the ring. Yelled at the fans for chanting for Cena. Said that he had beaten Cena at Mania. It did not matter how, all of a sudden. He had beaten him, and he was going to leave 2011. He was going to leave this horrible town with his head held high because he was the Miz. At which point, truth music hit. 30 days are up. He came out, and I know we've been talking about, well, for about a year now, how Miz does not project the aura of a tough guy. Well, they made him look like the biggest fool tonight. Truth came out and absolutely, completely, utterly destroyed this guy. I mean, just destroyed him. And left him in a heap, holding his head, his shoulder, his face. He was bullied. Just completely bullied here by Truth. And then Truth cut a promo on him, busted a water bottle over his head, walked away looking nuts, and the announcers were essentially mocking Miz for having taken such a beating. So
I should mention another thing off of last week's show when you talk about the announcers is that, and it was really clear that Michael Cole was way, way, way toned down.
Oh, yeah.
Because there was a feeling that he went too far last week, which wasn't him because he was just doing what he was ordered, but that all of the people who talked about how this announcing has hurt certain guys that they need to get over. That was something that was taken into account, and it wasn't just ignored like normally would be the case. And I don't know if it, Vince second guessing himself, which is actually you say it's rare, but it's really not because they do that constantly. But he was really toned down, and Michael Cole was not burying everyone in sight the way he normally would. It's not like he was changed his character, but he was a very toned down version of the same character. I think that I think that one of the things is that they want to keep Michael Cole as an announcer, but they do recognize that the Michael Cole as he's been has done a lot of damage, or maybe they're at least concerned that he may have when they put new people in the main event and they bombed the way they did. I mean, that main event rating was not something that they just ignored. I mean, you could see the reaction from both, for all the reasons that people complained about, from the announcing to the guys themselves. Everyone was hurt by that rating.
We had Big Show with one arm tied behind his back versus Otunga. He was beating the crap out of this guy when suddenly Henry's music hit, and he limped down to the ring. This poor guy, flying him all over the country with a torn groin just to do angles. And Show couldn't get his arm untied, and so Henry laid him out. And then Daniel Bryan's music hit. He distracted Henry. Show had a chance to untie himself. He went after Henry. Henry bailed. Otunga got the choke slam. And then just because it's important that wins and losses matter here in WWE, they made sure to announce it show one via DQ. So there you go.
Oh, I didn't even know that.
Yes, they did. They had a WWE Network promo. I was told that live, absolutely nobody cared about this promo. So
yeah, I've heard a lot more about the network. It's nothing, just the same thing. It's no, you know, it was actually compared to the XFL, and to me, from someone, in the sense of the way it was rushed out, that that I guess the football people were telling Vince, you know, that you know, it's too early to start. They need preseasons. They need this and this and this. And Vince, in his mind, just felt that you just do it. And I think this network's the same thing, that you know, the idea of the network isn't necessarily so bad, but you know, to be ready in 3 more months, there's you know, when they haven't even hired the staff yet, but it's going to be what it's going to be.
So we had Ricardo coming out in a neck brace, and he introduced Alberto, who was in a wheelchair, and Del Rio.
Yeah, another guy who had to fly across the country to the torn groin.
Mm-hmm. He revealed that he had been injured, the most painful injury a man could suffer.
You know, here's the thing, as far as the torn groin go. Both cases, Mark Henry and Alberto Del Rio, were both in tremendous pain. They were both examined by the doctor, said there was nothing wrong at the building, and they were still in tremendous pain. I think these guys, you know, kind of know when something's up there, and they're all pretty tough guys. And the doctor goes, oh, you know, you're okay. You know, it's like, and they never are. You know what I mean?
Maybe they need a new doctor. Maybe Francois Petit needs to return.
I guess. You know, this doctor's not very good at examining groins.
I guess not. Maybe it's a female doctor and she's not allowed to.
Yeah.
Anyway, he's very upset that the peasants were scoffing at him, and the Bellas came out and started doing their gimmick where they yelled at each other, and he told them to shut up and get out of here. And he promised his New Year's resolution was he would be back and more aggressive than ever. I did a terrible job recapping this segment, but I thought this segment was great.
Yeah, I mean, it was. The thing of, I don't know, to me, like, the Bella Twins gimmick, so, I don't know, like, you know, Vince told the writers they needed to do something with the Bella Twins. They need to get them on TV more. So they come up with this idea where they just argue over nothing all the time. It's kind of, I don't know, didn't do anything for me. Alberto was very good here, though.
Yes, he was.
As far as, like, everything. And he's...
As was Ricardo.
Ricardo just stood there, but I will say the tie over the neck brace was hilarious. But, yeah, he's out, I guess, 4 to 6 weeks. He's having minor surgery this week. Probably out of the Rumble. Almost definitely out of the Rumble. And, you know, then he's scheduled for the Elimination Chamber if he's recovered on time for it. But, we'll see.
We had the Gauntlet. Punk versus Swagger was first. Kind of sucked. Went like 2 minutes, and then Crow Cop high kick finish. Then Ziggler came out, and they actually had a really good match. Before the match started, Swagger chop blocked Punk's knee, so that played into the match. And for the finish, Punk hit a running knee in the corner and went for the GTS, and Swagger took the ref. And Vicky grabbed Punk's foot. Dolph hit a famouser, which was hideous, but Punk kicked out, at which point Laurinaitis stormed down to the ring. And Punk hit a high kick. He was about to make the cover, and Laurinaitis said, "Ref, hold on!" He said, "You didn't see this, but Vic interfered," and so he ejected both of them, which gave Dolph a chance to recover. He hit the zigzag as Laurinaitis was distracting Punk, got the pin, got the title shot next week, paraded around with the belt. My only question was, why did John Laurinaitis freak out in the second match? I don't know. I guess he just wanted to make extra sure that he didn't have to wrestle tonight.
Mm-hmm.
But Punk could have beaten like a second man before Ziggler if need be. But I guess they just wanted to do it this way. So there you go.
Well, they didn't want it to be predictable.
I guess so. So it is Punk versus Dolph for the WWE title next week on Raw. And that's the first Raw of 2012. We had Kane coming out. This was when this show just went off a cliff. Long story short, from what I can gather, maybe you can correct me, Kane, after being destroyed by Mark Henry, came back with his mask on again, and instead of attacking Henry, he attacked John Cena, and the reason was because he wants Cena to turn on the fans who are chanting, "Cena sucks." Did I miss anything there?
No, you got it right. You know what was really embarrassing?
It's preposterous.
Okay, what was really embarrassing, and one of the reasons they did it more than once, was they showed the crowd, and they were trying to show the crowd chanting, "Cena sucks." And when you saw the crowd, and there was a chant in the background, all it did was expose the chants. Because, I mean, you could see hundreds of people. And in those hundreds of people, there's, you know, like, I don't know, 2-3 people that are chanting anything, whether it's "Let's go Cena" and "Cena sucks," which were both kind of getting these light chants in the background. And they counted on this crowd to do this. And they went to the crowd a couple of times, and you're looking at the crowd, and they're talking about this crowd as, you know, is hating Cena, and they're just not reacting. They're just sitting there, you know, just like a crowd that's at a...
Like a crowd that's sitting watching a stupid promo that is presented in a boring fashion?
Yeah, I mean, but not reacting.
Yeah, because it was a stupid promo.
Like, why are you showing this crowd not reacting when you're trying to... When the story is how this crowd is so wild into Cena or hating Cena, and they're showing that, like, they're not reacting at all. Again, you know, like, the first time I can see it, no, I couldn't, because before you cut to that shot, you should have people chanting. I mean, usually they'll do it as a focus on, like, when they do this chant, you find, like, one person in the crowd, and you focus on him, because you can find one person. You know, the gimmick of the whole chanting is that actually very, very few people, it takes very few people to make a chant, and most people really don't chant. But this one was ridiculous, because it was, you know, they showed, again, like, a wide shot of nobody chanting, where you could hear chanting in the background. So all it did is like, this chanting's a gimmick. You know, it's like, no one's really actually chanting. So I thought that was, you know, made for pretty lousy television. This whole idea that, you know, now when you watch it, I mean, it's like, to pay this off, he has to turn. So, or come up with a good reason, I don't know.
Well, I just figure the whole storyline is, and this is kind of funny, because I know that there were people that liked this promo, and the problem, I think, is the people who like this promo are expecting him to eventually turn. But to me, the whole storyline is, Cena is the guy that, no matter what, he always does the right thing. And in
the end... Well, maybe one of those, maybe just doing the right thing long enough and the crowd turns on you. You know, you can turn the situation, and the bottom line is, you know, like them or whatever they do. The fact is from January until the first week of April, this guy's going to be a heel whether you like it or not. So you can either have him be a heel short term, or you can just fight it and have him do the right thing for 4 months and get booed. You know, you got to make that call. You know what I mean? I don't know. The way they're going, to me, they have to turn him heel the way they're going with the story, or else they're just, like, wasting our time. Now, that's not to say that this is the idea that they're trying to do a swerve and waste everyone's time, or that this is the idea, and then, you know, someone will go to Vince this week and just go, you know what, there's a risk here in turning him heel, and it's not necessarily a risk we need to take right now when very few people are over, and then Vince can go, oh, yeah, and then we're back to square one, and it becomes like 80% of the angles here where, you know, you build something up and nothing happens.
All right, everybody, let's do some of the questions here. Some of this has to do with stuff we've been talking about here today. This person says, in reading a recap of Final Battle, it said that Steen putting Generico through the table was done because Generico was on his way out of the company. Any truth to this, or is he just going to be working overseas for a while?
I mean, it's clearly an injury angle, and it's clearly that he's going to be brought back. So, yeah, I mean, I guess that means he'll be working overseas or something, but, yeah, you know, I mean, I think he's going to be away for a little while, but now the thing is, I guess they could just say it was taped, but on the show as late as January the 7th, I believe, no, or January the 7th, 14th, January 14th, the January 14th TV show, Generico is still in a match, so I guess they could just say it was taped before Final Battle, but God, that... Then you're exposing your TVs,
or you just don't air it.
No. It's the 80-minute match. It's the whole TV show.
Oh.
You know, so, and
well,
I think...
Well, that's a little different because, I mean, you have to explain that. That one I think it's okay to say. This was taped.
Yeah, but I don't think you want to go in there and go, this was taped 3 weeks ago. It's one thing to say it was taped, like you do the TV show that's this coming Saturday, and just go, this was taped before Final Battle. You can kind of do that, but when it's January 14th, you're telling people, oh, my God, we're taped so far ahead. That's not good in this day and age.
Are you sure? I don't think that was on a television taping. That was just a house show.
No. The January 14th show in Green. The January 14th show is scheduled to be the show from Greensboro.
I'm saying that Greensboro was not a TV taping.
Yes, it was.
Was it?
They taped Spartanburg for January 7th and Greensboro for January 14th, and then the first, because they're already caught up. All the tapings are done, and this week and next week, last Saturday night, which makes they did a best of. The New Year's Eve show they did the best of because the mentality is why air a new episode on New Year's Eve when no one's watching anyway. So they're going to do then January. They're taping January 7th in Baltimore, but that show the first hour of that will not air till January 21st. So the 7th is going to be the Honor Rumble from Spartanburg, and the 14th is going to be the elimination match from Greensboro, which is Eddie Edwards, Generico, Haas, and Benjamin, who. Already turned against the Briscoes, who already turned, I think, and the Briscoes were teaming with Roderick Strong and Michael Elgin.
Well, maybe you go in there and you say, an untelevised event 3 weeks ago, one of the greatest...
That were airing on television?
One of the greatest matches in ROH history occurred.
Airing on television, but...
And people were clamoring to see this match, and so we're going to give you an edited version here tonight in this special episode of the program.
But I wouldn't do that because then you're telling people that, you know, you're editing the match, that the match is not current. When you do that, that's a method to tell people to turn off your television sets because you're airing something from the past. You know, I mean,
if you put it over as one of the great moments in history.
If you say it's dated in a storyline. Thing people are going to turn off the TV.
I don't know.
I mean, you got to present it as it's happening. If you present it as it's happening now, it's one thing. But if you tell people, oh, by the way, this is from a month ago, you know, they're not going to care. Especially a long match. Long matches on TV, I mean, they're hit and miss. I mean, granted, you're not going in there and saying, like, oh, by the way, this match is taking up the entire hour. Then you're dead if you say that. But if you presented as like there's a match and it just happens to take over up the hour, you know, then that's a different story.
All right, this person says, is Michael Cole a wrestling fan before working for WWE?
Not a big one, no.
So he watched it in the 80s?
I mean, he watched, yeah. I mean, it wasn't that he's not a fan, but he wasn't a big fan.
All right, with the death of genuine main event heels on Raw, has Vince made any overtures to Hunter to get him back to a full-time schedule on at least a temporary basis?
I don't think so, and I don't think that Vince wants it, and I don't think that Hunter wants it. I think they both know what the future is, and it's a lot more beneficial for him to learn than to be running around on the road doing, you know, especially like if his comeback, you know, matches like really popped numbers, you know, the ratings went up when he was on TV, and the buy rate went up, you know, on the you know, those pay-per-views he was on, it'd be one thing because then it's like saying, okay, you know, he's the star that's moving numbers, so we need him on the road. But because it didn't happen that way, I think it becomes even more clear that he doesn't need to be out there on the road doing house shows. He needs to be learning the business. Question is from who, but he needs to be learning it and wrestling, you know, on rare occasions. I mean, I think that's the deal with him. I can't see him going back doing house shows, especially at his age. You're asking for an injury as well, which is another thing they don't need.
This person says, any reason why WWE plays in the old Rosemont Horizon rather than the United Center downtown?
I think that it has to do with sight lines of two buildings and convenience. It's just the arena for wrestling. I know they've run the United Center in the past. And evidently, I mean, it was probably a rent situation at the time when that was a deal. And plus, the smaller building obviously is easier to sell out. So, you know, that's probably why. I know UFC switched. I think the UFC went with the Allstate Arena when they ran a couple of years ago, and they're running at the United Center, and they're having a lot of trouble. You know, I mean, it would be the same at the Allstate Arena, but they're having trouble selling a lot of tickets. You know, just more, you know, again, now and nowadays, I mean, they did sell out tonight. So, but as a general rule, you know, it's not like they're selling out. Well, they did sell out for Money in the Bank, and that one was pay-per-view, and then they could do Extreme Rules. I think it's just the contract they have with the building, and that's that. It's probably a beneficial contract. They've been running for a lot of years. They feel that the location is, I mean, that's one of the things, is the feeling is the location's a lot better for their audience.
This person here has a question about the Jim Barnett obituary from 2004. It said that Barnett was fired by the WWF in 87 for uncertain reasons. Can Dave elaborate on this, given Barnett was a major figure in wrestling, his release from the WWF in the 80s boom period? It seems like an important historical detail.
It is, and I don't really remember. I remember, you know, he was released, and then he tried to kill himself. As a simple, you know, whether he was really trying to kill himself or whether he was working trying to kill himself to be caught and then have sympathy for Vince to take him back, I don't know. With Barnett, I would lean towards that reason, the sympathy of getting his job back, because that's, but I don't know that, and no one ever will know. As far as what it was that got him fired, it had to be pretty big. But at the same time, it's not, you know, Vince did hire him back, although, you know, Vince hiring him back was at the end of his life, you know, sort of a consulting job, you know, just kind of to give him something. He was broken, and to give him something, and for all his years and helping build the company. But yeah, I mean, and Barnett did go to work for Turner, you know, soon after, and worked there until 2001 when the company folded. So, you know, and they had to know, I mean, like, they know that, well, at the time this was 87, so they didn't know that Turner was going to buy. But they still had to figure that there was a good chance he was going to go to work for Crockett. And he was the master of dirty tricks, although maybe they felt that, I don't know. I mean, he was still pretty much doing those in those days. I mean, so as far as what it was, I don't know the answer. The only thing that I remember was people saying that he was, like, working to do something to undermine and steal it from Vince, but I don't buy that, because it was like Vince owned 100% of the company, and you couldn't steal it from Vince. And if he was working for a power grab, what power was there to grab, in the sense that he was already number two in the company behind Vince? So that doesn't make any sense. But something happened with him and Vince, and then he got fired, and I don't know.
All right, one more. Do you think WWE could have popped a rating by announcing a Punk versus Cena rematch in Chicago for Raw?
Nah, I don't think that people would see that as anything special, because it's been done so many times. So, I mean, if Punk and Cena was in the main event segment as compared to what they put in the main event segment, would it have done better? Yeah,
yes.
For sure it would have. But if they announced it, would it really have done better? Especially, you know what, this week, I mean, I sensed watching this week's show that you know, yeah, that they tweaked some things and everything, but at the same time, I don't think that this show was designed with, I think there's an idea with maybe the date and the last show of the year, and they've got two more weeks against football, that they're probably not going to do so well this week. And, you know, next week, obviously, you know, even though they're going against football, they are trying to gear up for a big show. You know, and then, like, in theory, you know, January 9th, the rating should come back to the 3.4, 3.5 level. And you know, it very well could. It happens every January. You know, it may not, you know, it may not, because it's kind of flat right now. But, you know, I don't think that, like, this week's rating, I don't know that anyone was expecting a big rating this week anyway. You could do it if you had to do it. Again, I guess the nature of it wouldn't have been so bad, but, you know, they had a different idea, you know, where they wanted to, number one, they wanted to beat Punk. Cena beating Punk right now makes no sense. You know, Ziggler beating Punk, you know, at least sets up a match for next week, so it makes more sense. So, yeah, they, you know, I mean, Would it have helped compared to what they do? Sure. You know, but that wasn't the direction they were going.
All right, everybody, we're going to wrap it up for today, but we're going to be back in a couple of days with a brand new show. We got a lot of stuff to talk about heading into the biggest Friday of the year, final Friday of the year, in fact, as well. So that's coming up, plus brand new issues of The Observer, Figure 4, a lot of stuff coming up, so check it out. We'll talk to you again after a while.